the Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in Wine and Space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
Today we are marking the passing of Queen Elizabeth II at the age of 96, our longest reigning monarch ever in the UK, and second longest around the world. Now, we haven't recorded a special episode for this. We are repurposing what we hope is the nearest thing that's suitable, which is the 1950s series Knight Errant.
So why do we think this is the most suitable?
Because it has the word knight in the title.
Fair enough. I was going to say, because when you asked me what we could repurpose that would be suitable, I couldn't actually think of anything that we've done that was at all royal.
No, nothing apart from there is an It's a Royal Knockout that we were absolutely hammered for. But
okay, that is royal and respectful, because for all I'm not a royalist, I had an awful lot of time for the Queen. I had a great deal of respect. Not, I mean, she'd slowed down in recent years, but for God's sake, the woman was 90-odd. I mean, she's allowed to take things easy. But I mean, back in her heyday, she was a good ambassador for the country.
I have to agree, you and I are on very different sides of the fence where the royal family are concerned, but you've always been respectful about it. You've had your views, but all credit to you, I've never been disrespectful. You and I have different opinions on many different things. I like to think that we are both quietly respectful of each other's differences, but where the royal family are concerned, I know there's the school of thought out there that they are parasites, they live a wonderfully rich life. My view on it is quite different. I think that it's a job that you're born into that you really can't get out of. There are notable exceptions, but they still can't quite let go. And the level of service involved, particularly into your 90s, Prince Philip, he gave up at 96. And I think that's a fairly long enough career to be allowed to retire at 96. I would rather respect the institution and what they bring to the country rather than just doff my cap and scrape and bow and, oh, you're so much better than us. That's never been my view. I think that they provide a beautiful safety buffer. Let's put it that way. When you look at countries around the world that have got a presidential system, the buck stops with the president. And our last president would have been Boris Johnson. I'll just park that there. At least the Queen or the monarch is there. If some crazy law does land on her desk and she is the last stage in any law, if she decides not to sign it, she doesn't have to sign it. That's the main thing that I would say in favour of retaining a monarchy, is that it is that last backstop against somebody completely and utterly insane.
And we disagree on this, and this isn't the place for that discussion. I don't have any respect for the institution of the monarchy. I am absolutely a Republican, but I do have respect for a number of the people who are in the monarchy, and high up on that list was Queen Elizabeth. I think she was a remarkable woman. She did give service to the country in her way. There is an argument that that service was outdated and unnecessary, but that doesn't detract from the way that she did it. It doesn't detract from how admirable she was as a person. There are other members of the royal family that I don't think are particularly admirable. There are other people that in the royal family that I have a great deal of respect for, Princess Anne, Prince Harry, I think show them in their positive light. I'm not going to go into the people that I think show the royal family in its negative light, because now is not the time for ardent republicanism. The country's in shock. If you're going to be dispassionate about it, and, you know, it's my day job, I can be very dispassionate about this. She was a 96-year-old leaning stick who had got to the end of her time and had a end of her life that my terminally ill patients will never get in terms of the quality of facilities that she would have access. I mean, anything she needed would have been provided at the drop of a hat, where I have to beg, steal and borrow from anywhere to get things that my patients need. That, unfortunately, is the reality of somebody who is mega rich versus somebody who is purely relying on the NHS. We do the best that we can, but we can't provide the level of facilities that she will have had. So do I think it's particularly sad? No, not personally. I'm sympathetic for her family, because whatever you think about the politics of the situation, these people have lost their mother, they've lost their grandmother, they've lost their great-grandmother. There does seem to have been an awful lot of affection within that family, and they will be feeling it hard. And now is not the time to be saying a detailed political breakdown of why they shouldn't be where they are. Leave that until things have settled, until things are less raw, until the country's less grieving. If you're somebody who's not grieving about it, that's your decision, that's your choice. Respect the fact that there are people that are.
But either way, I think we can agree that she was a remarkable woman. And on that, I think we should pass over to our younger selves and see what we thought of Knight Errant.
I remember quite enjoying Knight Errant.
So do I. Quietly surprised. It was a network DVD release that was quite unassuming, and I remember it being a nice Saturday afternoon where we were taken by surprise.
And one of the earliest things that we've reviewed.
Yes, 1950s.
Apart from that and Quatermass, there's not an awful lot of 1950s stuff we've done.
Not that isn't a film, no.
We might have to address that at some point. I have ideas.
Anyway, boys, Ron VT, let's see what you thought. Hello, boys and girls. Very warm welcome to the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
Today we are going to be watching the 1959-61 series Knight Errant, or What Remains of It. But let's launch straight in. We need to get the tonic screwdriver out and get the lid off the gin. What have we got for tonight?
London Minister's Gin.
It's a 37.5% gin. The info bollocks tells us Minister's Gin is made from the finest infusion of juniper and other botanicals, handcrafted for your pleasure. The end. Ingredients, water, alcohol, natural flavour. I feel like I know less now, having read that. What do we think of the sniff?
Not much.
Barely nothing. Anyway, eyes down. Ooh, I'm not sure.
Well, it's got a sort of lemony edge to it, which you're probably not wildly keen on.
It's another one of what I've been describing recently as musty gins. I'm not particularly keen on that. I will manfully force it down, but...
I think it's all right, but nothing special. It does have a lemony edge to it. I'm not getting the mustiness. I know what you mean by that in other gins that we've had. I'm not getting that from this particular one. For me, the predominant flavour, such as it is a bit of lemon. But this tastes like a standard gin and tonic with a slice of lemon in it. I don't think there's anything particularly special about it. It's quite reasonably smooth, but I don't think this is any higher than a 3.
No, I'm actually going to give that a 2. It's not unpleasant. I always feel a bit disingenuous giving things 2, because it always sounds like I'm marking them down horribly. It's not to my taste. There's something in that actually would push me away from a second one, or even a first, to be honest. But yes, it's all right. It's all right. But no, we've had much, much better. And it is, as you say, it falls into the bracket of the standard gin. But we've got our glasses in hand. It's time to descend into the undergallery and open up the Black Archive. Well, I don't know anything about Knight Errant. You've sent me the DVD. I've not watched it yet. But looking up online on the backstory of it, it fell into two series. There's Knight Errant 59 and there's Knight Errant Limited, which changed to after the lead actor left. 75 episodes of this were made. Only 2 still exist. Only 2.
One from the original run and one from Knight Errant Limited. And we're going to watch both of them. As well as changing the lead actor, his support regulars were changed as well. So he had 2 assistants in the first series. There was a female reporter and basically an office junior, who was played by Richard Carpenter, who would go on to become a writer and write Catweasel. And then in Knight Errant Limited, Wendy Williams plays his secretary. Wendy Williams, best known as Vyra.
Really? Is that her?
It's her from the Ark in Space. And when you know it's her, you can see it.
But it's not immediately obvious, even though it's only sort of 15 years earlier.
And she looks very, very different.
Long hair?
Not that she looks particularly younger. She just looks... It's the difference between looking 50s and looking 70s. And she has a very contemporary 1950s look in Knight Errant. And actually,
whenever you say that, all I see is Paula Quatermass. Hello. Welcome to the 1950s.
Well, we may have to do a Paula score later.
We do. We should start doing more regular Paula scores. Anything pre...
Because we don't have enough scores.
We don't have enough scores. We should score everything. We need a scale of scales. So yes, I'm going to, without really knowing much about the series or having seen a single frame yet, but that's what I'm going to rescue this time. What about you?
I'm going to go with another black and white ITV spy detective drama from a little bit later in the 60s. And there was a show called Ghost Squad.
Oh, which I have seen on your shelves, yes.
I have the network release of Ghost Squad. All the episodes of Ghost Squad survive. But its follow-on show after the lead actor left was something called GS5. And there are film inserts for a handful of episodes that survive, but there's no surviving episodes. Mm. And Ghost Squad itself is a lot of fun. It was interesting in that it followed the same sort of format as The Four Just Men, in that although there was a lead character and there was his boss and his boss's secretary, the lead character wasn't always the one that was sent out to do the investigating, so there were episodes that he didn't appear in, and other agents that worked for this organisation were sent out.
Right.
And there were some episodes where the lead agent was a woman, and that was quite unusual for mid-60s.
Because I have meant to ask you about Ghost Squad. It's such a 50s title. Or 50s, 60s, whatever it is. It's of that sort of era.
We'll do it at some point. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's a really good episode with Honor Blackman in, which was the first one that I saw.
Having retrieved a suitable amount from the vaults of lost film and television, shall we crack away on with Knight Errant?
The first episode is The Golden Opportunity.
How long are these on for? Are they 50-minute things?
45, 50 minutes, something like that.
And when is this one? Is this from 1959?
This is from 1959, to be exact, the 13th of October 1959, and was written by Mr. Clive Exton.
Now, come on, trot out the anecdote before we press play.
What, the fact that his name isn't really Exton?
Weren't you collared in a Blockbuster video?
One of the moves that we did when I was a teenager was apparently near to where he lived. And at the time, his daughter was dating Christopher Reeve. So when I went to join the local video library, they said, oh, are you Superman's brother-in-law? Not knowing any of the background to that, it just seemed a very odd question to ask.
But, well...
When I was Bournemouth, they used to do some odd things.
I don't think I've ever been to Bournemouth.
I missed anything. Actually, to be fair, 35 years ago when I was living there as a bored out of my skull teenager, you weren't missing anything. Apparently it's changed now. There's a university and it is a much more vibrant town and it's not God's waiting room.
Really? I do remember at some point in the dim and distant past, I've never been to Bournemouth, but I've driven past a sign to Bournemouth because on one side it was pointing towards Bournemouth, the other side was pointing towards Dover, and the sign was...
Well, the one side of the side would be either Poole or Christchurch.
Well, it was somewhere where it was a port, but it said on it, Dover for the continent, and somebody had scrawled on the Bournemouth side for the incontinent.
That would be Poole.
Yeah, well, wherever it was, but it was...
I mean, Poole Harbour is the deepest harbour around the UK.
You're just full of information.
I did used to live there.
I know.
My parents lived on Jersey, I used to get the ferry out of Poole quite often to go and see them.
Some of the best graffiti I've ever seen has been on road signs. My favourite is still Nice, and somebody had scrawled underneath that one Cyril. It wouldn't mean nothing in France, and I suspect it means nothing to a great deal of people in England now, but was that British Gas? Nice one, Cyril.
I've always thought of it as a football thing.
Anyway, I'm misremembering, and we're getting way off topic. Without further ado, it's Run VT, Knight Errant.
These foreigners can't make tea. Never could and never will. God knows I've tried to teach them. Slow the uptake, foreigners.
Oh.
Very slow when they want to be.
Do you really think that's true?
Oh, I know it's true. Been here 5 years. Oh, can't stand it abroad.
Why do you live abroad, then?
When the Admiral died, I came over here to save money. Can't afford the taxes and the home ports now. And then I met this man and married him for my sins.
Oh, Mr. Vakovsky.
Yes, he's a Pole, you know. Nice enough chap. Can't get away from the fact that he's a foreigner.
Yes, but on the other hand, you're a foreigner to him, aren't you?
Me? A foreigner? What do you mean? I'm British.
Yes, but the British are foreigners to other foreigners. I mean...
Mrs. Vakovsky, could we just get down to business?
Yes, of course.
We tried to do as you asked about the sovereigns, but we ran into a little difficulty.
Difficulty?
Yes. The first was that we couldn't find a shopkeeper who would accept them.
Extraordinary. Not like the old days, eh?
No, I imagine not.
Don't know what we're coming to.
Well, we did try an awful lot of shopkeepers, Mrs. Vakovsky.
What were the other difficulties?
Well, we discovered that some of the sovereigns weren't genuine.
Well, hello. That was Knight Errant. A golden opportunity.
59.
59. Different times, different times.
A very good vintage.
I'm tempted to say it's very dated.
It's massively dated.
It's not
the thing about it is dated. there were bits of it that were probably dated in 1959. Right, so we've just watched the only surviving episode from Knight Errant 59, which is called The Golden Opportunity. It was the fifth episode in series one. Knight Errant is the story of a detective agency that is there to just help people. And I'm not sure they actually made any money out of it. It was just this is something that we do to help people who need help. And Adam Knight is the guy who runs it, and he has two assistants. Oh, God, what's her name?
I can't remember. It's just...
Is it Liz?
Oh, yes, Liz, yeah.
Liz and Peter.
Peter Parker.
Yeah. And Adam Knight doesn't really turn up a huge amount in this episode. They're a bit at the beginning, he's there a bit at the end. In both occasions, he's a phenomenally patronising arse.
Well, he walks in. Hello, children.
Yeah. He's so dismissive of his co-workers, it's not true. So while he's out of the office, Peter has the opportunity to work on a case in himself. And a British battle axe, in a way that only British women of that era and of that vintage can be battle axes.
Yes.
See also Peggy Mount.
Yeah, they don't build them like that anymore.
Turns up and asks him to use some gold sovereigns to buy things. And they can't just sell them. They've got to be used to actually purchase stuff and get signed affidavits to say that they have been used to purchase things, or get signed affidavits to say that purchase has been refused. So Liz and Peter spend several days traipsing around London trying to get something, anything bought with these sovereigns, and they can't. They also go to a goldsmith who looks at half a dozen of them and says, yes, these are genuine sovereigns. After Adam Knight has a look and says, well, actually, there's one of these that was minted in a year when no sovereigns were struck.
Just one of the things I happen to know. That was such a crowbar line.
Well,
he was quite open about the fact it's one of the nonsense things that's cluttering his head that he happens to
know. Both of us have littering about in our heads.
So. Disregard.
And you are now not going to forget that there were no sovereigns struck in 1933. So the woman who had requested the affidavits disappears off to Switzerland. So Liz and Peter follow her to Switzerland with the envelope full of affidavits, and they go to meet her, and she's quite bombastic and, oh God, terribly Brexity about foreigners.
These foreign devils. I'm not foreign to these foreigners, but I'm British.
British, I can't be foreign. There were certain elements where she was Farage in a frock. And she won't tell them why she wants the affidavits, and they arrange to meet for dinner. Meantime, she goes to visit her new husband in prison, who is the one who has made these sovereigns, who is being held for forgery. And his argument is that it can't be forgery because it's not currency in the country of origin. So because they've not been able to use it to buy anything in the UK, and they've got proof of that from the affidavits, it can't be currency, and therefore he can't be held guilty of forgery. Peter takes pity on this woman, goes along to have dinner with her. Liz refuses to come along. Peter gets absolutely slaughtered on gin and hands over the affidavits, which Mrs. Woman promptly burns as soon as his back is turned. Liz gets arrested as part of the ongoing case. Peter goes and sees the forger and finds out exactly what's going on, but then gets held for questioning himself. The court case comes up. Looks as though everything is going to fall apart. And then suddenly Adam Knight is called as a witness with the original affidavits, which he swapped out from the envelope. The court case is thrown out, not found guilty of forgery because the coins that he's produced, even though he's made a profit from them, are not usable currency in their country of origin. There's a scene between him and his wife. He realises that his wife has tried to shaft him, and he puts a coin in her hand, which didn't look like a sovereign.
No, it didn't.
Whether it was supposed to be a symbolic piece of silver, I don't know. And then there's a final jokey, laughy scene with Adam Knight again being a patronising arse, and not only calling his co-workers children, but calling them minions.
Minions.
The little jobs have built up while the minions have been away, so I've come to sort things out. And you really just want to slap him one.
I've got to say, there were some beautiful lines in that. For all that we sort of...
Great
she
lines.
Did. She got some of the best ones because it was quite pithy and dry. And
Up until the point where she was in the prison cell and the only thing she was interested in is getting hold of her makeup. And there's a bit where she says, every so often, I have to admit that I'm only a weak and useless woman, or words to that.
But it's all done tongue-in-cheek, it's not. Really? You see, that's not how it came across. Now, whether it was her portrayal or...
It is tongue-in-cheek. It's still what's said is being said. And I think she would have been a much better character if she'd done that whole... pithy and independent and not asking for help. And yet you have Adam coming in who is, oh, well, never mind, children, I have sorted it out. She didn't need to ask for help, and I think that weakens her character. But it was 1959. It was the era of Paula Quatermass. Compare her to Paula Quatermass. Paula?
Yeah, hello. In fact, I'm going to get out the scale.
Professor Quatermass's office. You're speaking. Is it something bad?
The RPometer is out.
Especially seeing as Liz is played by a Canadian actress. And they reference in Knight Errant that she's Canadian and she sounds so British. It's not true.
What are we giving this in Paula's?
Paula's 4.
I'd say it's a good 4, yes.
Because you've got some spectacularly Paula, particularly with the battle axe. She is Paula's great aunt.
Played by a woman whose name I can't remember, but she was Catherine de' Medici in The Massacre. And it's a measure of the fact that there's not a single frame of footage exists from that, and we both recognised her from the still. And there aren't even that many stills from The Massacre.
Yeah, but one of them's a really good close-up. I mean, it's a close-up up her nose, but it is very much a close-up of her. She was a great character. I mean, she was a very unpleasant character, but actually really entertaining to watch. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I think it's a really nice slice of hokey 1950s television that was probably hokey at the time. The incidental music is...
It's very carry-on.
It's a bit carry-on. And really quite intrusive at times.
That's putting it mildly,
Alan's comment that you could just imagine the BBC orchestra in the next
Yeah, it's this bouncy sort of Puffin Billy-esque music. I wasn't expecting it. I was expecting more detective drama theme music, and that's not what opened the episode.
Now, I wonder how typical this episode is of the series, because this was played for laughs, and it was really good fun. But Adam Knight almost isn't in it. He's there at the beginning, he's there at the end, and then it's the office juniors who take on a case themselves and fuck it up, and he has to come in and sort it out, and it is played for laughs. Whether that kind of light-hearted comedy carried on to the rest of the episodes... It's a real shame we haven't got any more to see.
Well, we're going to watch the other surviving episode, which is from Knight Errant Limited.
Cast
is different, isn't it?
It has a different lead cast, a different secretary. Actually, there are similarities between the two episodes, because in the second one, it's also predominantly the secretary who's the lead character while she's away on holiday, I think possibly in Switzerland. So... whether whoever was deciding which episode survived.
I like these two. They've got Switzerland in. I quite liked this for Switzerland. I ate Toblerone once. Shall we hit play and see what it's like?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Excuse me. Can I have a word with you for a moment?
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, can't it be in private?
Well, I'm in the middle of a game, sir.
This is urgent.
I never heard anything yet that wouldn't keep.
Well, this won't.
Well, what is it? Fire away. Go on.
Could you use £3,000?
Are you kidding?
I want to pay you for my IOU. Double or quits.
No deal.
Why not?
You've lost enough already.
Well, this is a fine time to get moral about it.
Who's being moral? You've lost a stack of money. I don't want to see you lose any more.
There's always the chance that I might win. Have you thought of that?
I lay awake at night thinking about it.
Will you play or won't you?
No. Now, listen, Sonny. I don't mind playing with you. But if I win again, the management will disapprove. I'm here to entertain, see, not to ruin.
Couldn't be that you're frightened. I'm frightened of losing.
Now, listen, boy. I am in the middle of a game. You're being very rude.
I'm sorry.
Alan, he is right, you know. £3,000 is an awful lot of money.
Yes, I know.
Well, why double or nothing?
It's quicker that way.
Well, dear boy, what have we just endured?
I think that's a little bit harsh. we've just watched the second surviving episode from Knight Errant from 1961, an episode called The Joker, and this is with the second cast set. This is predominantly based around the character played by Wendy Williams, the secretary of the Knight Errant organisation called Francis. And she's away on holiday, a resort in Austria that has a casino. She befriends a young military officer who's there who has lost an awful lot of money to a singer. It's an enthusiastic description. to an entertainer. And he's racked up debts to £1,500, which is about 30,000
grand,
pounds.
Yeah, in new money.
And the young lad's a bit of an idiot because he borrows a whole load of money from Francis and tries to win back the amount that he needs to be able to pay off the debt at the roulette table. He loses all of her money and then he tries to double or quit and ends up owing £3,000. In the meantime, Francis has got in touch with her boss, who's from the same regiment as the young fella. He comes over to Austria. They realise that the bloke who's won the money is a card shark. He has a pair of reading
X-ray
glasses
specs, basically.
Can look through the playing cards and tell you exactly what the cards are. He's in cahoots with one of the waiters who will bring a fresh pack of cards each time that he wants. The colonel arranges for another double or quit session to sort out the debt. Card shark puts on his glasses, realises that the waiter has been co-opted and brings over a normal pack of cards that he can't see. He loses the cut and agrees to leave before the police are called, taking his special glasses away with him.
We took a lot of getting there.
It was a very slow episode. It didn't have any of the whimsy of the first.
There were flashes of it, but they were very...
Wendy Williams puts in a credible performance, but she doesn't have the lines that Kay Callard had in the first episode. The plot is much, much more pedestrian. It's very much this is a dodgy bloke singing appallingly. This is a dodgy bloke. Oh, look, he's got a pair of magic glasses that happen to help look through the back of particular sets of cards. We lay a trap for him. The trap lasts about 3 seconds. There's a vague romantic subplot with the daughter of a rich American family that never really gets off the ground. It's all a bit pedestrian. I really enjoyed the first episode. It had a lot of eccentricity and whimsy and a lot of fun. This one was just...
I think it's what Terence Dix would probably label as an alternative to showing the test card. That was 40 minutes of filler and 5 minutes of story.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. And it's a shame because if the first episode was anything to go by, this was a very entertaining series.
Yeah.
And it was wildly popular at the time. It ran to 3 seasons. There must have been something about it. But I don't think we've seen a good second episode, although I thoroughly enjoyed the first one. It would be really nice to see other episodes of this turn up, but I think it's unlikely.
It sounds like it. I mean, all I will say is that the lead characters in this, I keep wanting to call Elvira, Wendy Williams, good character, the Colonel, it's a good character. Touch of the Hartnells in the performance. It's just not wrapped up in a plot.
And they do their best, and Monty Berman will be so proud of the use of stock footage and establishing photos.
Stock footage mixed with dreadful photo blow-up backdrops when they cut to it. But yes, the stock footage was admirable. I've got to give them that. I think in both episodes, the first one was a little bit... I'm sure there was a bit of stock footage dropped into that.
There was a plane... And there was a little bit of aerial footage of Geneva, but that was basically it.
But for the time, that would have been quite glamorous.
Yeah.
And they at least made the effort.
And
looking
at
it through 21st...
things of that time, so Man of the World, Sentimental Agent. It's exactly the same. You use stock footage to establish your location, and all the rest is studio-bound. So that I don't have a problem with. That was of its time. The music was less intrusive.
It was. It wasn't quite Puffin' Billy this time. It was Carry On Night.
But I didn't enjoy the episode as much as I enjoyed the first
one. I'm disappointed because I agree with your appraisal there that I think we've been just dealt a bad hand with this as a surviving episode.
And actually with both of these episodes, it's the supporting characters who are front and centre and the...
Because who was the main man at this point? Was it the Colonel?
No, it wasn't. It was somebody else who doesn't appear in the episode at all.
Oh, right. I mean, the idea, I was quite sceptical as to how this would work and why. You know, it's not the only series we've watched where the lead cast have completely changed from year to year, but why it would carry on where the title character, there is no knight in it anymore. It's a completely different cast. It's essentially a different programme.
Yeah. Well, no,
but it does work.
Program. It's the Knight Errant Organisation.
But it does work. And I think that the idea of having, the support cast. Or, I mean, is that a bit unfair? Are they a support cast? All right, you're going to have the main man, but it was very much Wendy Williams' episode for a good half of that until the Colonel turns up, and she was holding. If she was a secondary character or one of the supporting cast, she was doing a very good job of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like the Doctor Light episodes that you get in modern Doctor Who, and presumably it was whoever the lead character's
week off.
The same way as there are episodes of Doctor Who where lead characters don't appear.
For very flimsy reasons.
Yeah, Barbara ends up on the spaceship above the sense sphere for no particularly good reason for a couple of episodes. And William Hartnell jumps ahead a couple of spots on the travel dial on Keys of Marinus. And
Ben and Polly, their final story, I don't think they're not in four episodes and then they just randomly appear at the very end of it.
And each of them has an episode off in Power of the Daleks.
Power of the Daleks, yes.
I think it's Polly's kidnapped first and then Ben is kidnapped and you don't see each of them for an episode. And it was built into the plot. And I suspect that's what happened here. And the lead character had his week off. We happen to have got two surviving episodes where the lead character had his week off.
Yeah, I mean, we've been entertained, also. Well, certainly for one of the 2 hours we've spent watching this. Would I want to watch more? No. I think there are better investigative dramas that we've watched from the period.
Based on the first episode, I would.
Fair dues, no. Yeah. If there was more of the early ones.
Based on the second episode, no, I wouldn't. It was pedestrian even compared to other TV programmes of its time. But the first episode had a whimsical plot. It had really entertaining support characters. It had an interesting story behind it. Okay, Adam Knight was a bit of an arse and massively condescending. But Liz and Peter were very entertaining. The Battle Axe was a great deal of fun.
Catherine de' Medici.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed that first one. If that's more typical of the feel of the show, I would really like to see more. If the second one is more typical of the theme of the show, it's very pedestrian and I wouldn't particularly like to see more.
It's rare that we watch something where, because we both sort of did the side eye halfway through, you know, is this really...
Is this still going on?
It felt a lot longer than it actually was. It's rare that we're bored by something, but I was getting that way until... I mean, it picked up massively in the last 5 minutes, but, as you say...
Well, it was the resolution of plot, and it was...
Within, as you say, 3 seconds.
It was a fairly tick-box resolution of plot. Oh, look, we found these magic X-ray specs, and we'll just let him carry on with them as long as blokey that we like gets his money back. So no care about the next victim that will be a problem.
No.
And the Colonel just lets him take those glasses back. And a bit of backbone and said, well, yeah, off you fuck. And we're keeping these, so you can't fuck up somebody else's life.
As I say, we could be being very unfair to the series as a whole, but
looking at snapshots, this could be an Enemy of the World episode 3, which was quite a dull episode, but when you see the whole series, you realise that it's a low point in a very good series. Mm. This could be a low point in a good run of episodes.
I mean, there were 3 seasons of this, 75 episodes. That's quite a lot for, you know, spread over 20-odd episodes a series. So I would quite like to see on the back of this, the whatever survives of the, we must do the Avengers series by series, because the whole investigations thing, it sort of tacked on to both of the ones that we've had. She was there on holiday, happened to stumble across this gambling thing. In the first one, what's his name? I don't know. He wasn't even the chief crime solver. And it was a...
But he sort of tipped up and sort of things. And he was only in about 4 scenes, wasn't he? So it was possibly filmed at a different time and just slotted in to manage the fact that he was away for the week.
The one thing that did leap out, which they've done in both episodes, is the end of episode acting. To camera walk off.
Yes.
Police squad ending to the...
Yeah, there was an incidental character who was trying to persuade everybody to ski down some black run or something. Nobody will go with him. And then right at the very end, he's hobbling along on a broken leg and Francis says to him, oh, was this down the black road? No, I fell down the stairs. Nobody would play with me, so I got pissed and fell over.
But we're looking at, was it a cliche at the time?
Yeah, probably.
As you said, we're looking at something that's over 60 years old.
Yeah.
I still have trouble getting my head around that now.
I was really entertained by the first one. I wasn't by the second. Mm. As a result of that, if there were something to magically turn up, I'd quite like it to be the Adam Knight and Liz and Peter.
Yeah, I agree with that, yes.
Although it might be that the second iteration had very entertaining episodes as well. We just didn't see one.
But this was not, this wasn't BBC, it was...
No, this was Granada, from the north.
From the north. This had been made in North, proudly displayed on the title card.
And what do we think about Paula's?
Oh, Paula, yes, let's get out the scale.
Professor Quatermass's office. You're speaking. Is it something bad?
I think it's back in voice territory, because the Colonel does...
The Colonel's quite Paulery.
Yes, typical, wiry old man with a moustache and a very sharp suit. And I mean, hello.
At least this time the American actors actually have American accents. As opposed to the Canadian woman who had an accent you could cut glass with. Wendy Williams is she a bit Paula?
A touch, but she's not.
A touch, but not too bad.
No. I think the Colonel's winning out.
The Colonel's winning out, but there were a lot more... outstanding RP in the first one. So I think this is possibly a 3, because there was a lot of non-RP stuff as well.
There was, but before he'd even opened his mouth, I mean, I was somewhat taking the piss. The Colonel's first scene is in an office back in England, and he's reaching for the phone. And I said, hello, and it bloody was, hello.
Yeah, but that is one character.
Also, as a whole, yeah, 3, I suppose.
Think about there were all the American characters... Mm. Which is kind of most of the guest cast. And the Austrian one, you only really talk to the waiter, but he actually has a sort of a foreign accent.
One of those foreign Teutonic, generic foreign devils. Mm. Yeah, a pity, a real pity, because I really, really wanted to like this.
So I think that's 3 on the Paulerometer.
Yes.
So one to look at. It's beautifully presented by Network.
Network again.
It's not the greatest restoration. There are jumps, there are lines.
Well, it's not been restored at all. That's just been transferred. But yeah. To be fair, the but cost more so of restoration.
More so in the second episode than the first. And if you want to give this a go, I would recommend watching the first episode. And maybe giving the second episode a miss.
Mm. You've got to give kudos to Network for this. What is the target audience for this? Beyond me and you, and half a dozen other podcasters we know, who buys this stuff? They are...
There must be people who do, although they're now going more towards the classic film market.
Mm, I've noticed that, yeah.
Although they're about to release a remastered full set of Meg Race.
Yes, because some of the editing was interesting. There were some nasty, nasty stock footage edits in that, which you'd never get away with now. They would be tidied up. But hats off to Network again for taking a punt on putting this out, because you've got to be talking hundreds of copies rather than thousands.
Yeah. And the first episode was fun.
Yeah, it was. It was. So, yes, boys and girls, with that, we shall sign off and leave it for another time. We'll be back.
With something.
In the future. Goodbye.
Tarana.
The Exton-Moss experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.